I'm thinking about it. What do you think?
Yeah, I would. Hello, patrons. Happy Wednesday. This has been a long time since I've said it's topped and ham. Feels like a very long, it must be months, mate.
Come on, you Super England.
Yeah, he's still focusing on England. Still focusing on England. So
it's difficult not to.
Let's start with last week's podcast that you recorded with Clayton. I can't remember. Was it Romania that you were comparing to West Ham?
I don't recall that. I've forgotten. Why?
Was it Romania? I can't remember. I do recall your comments around us celebrating our big trophy a couple of seasons ago. Listen,
oh,
son,
yeah.
I'll take our big trophy over your fuck all trophies any day of the week.
Yeah. Oh, I know what it was now. No, it was after Austria and Turkey were throwing the cups on the pitch.
Oh, yeah.
That's what it was.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I have a pop at the fans for fucking being prats, because they're all prats for throwing the cups on the Europa Conference League final moment.
Yeah,
but
those
I'll take
who,
my big trophy any day.
For those who didn't hear that, yeah, I was like, can everyone stop throwing cups on a pitch? It's such a fucking West Ham thing to do, basically, is
Indeed.
what I'd said. And then I might have, I once I was there, I thought I'd get a little cheap shot in, basically.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, glass houses and all that. Get yourself a trophy first. Look, we are talking Tottenham. This start of the season feels very, as in this kind of preseason feels very different for me, for you. It kind of probably for me is what it was like for you last year, because new manager, new system, new everything. It's just an entire unknown, whereas you're now getting into second season, knowing what you're going to get from Ange, because he doesn't like to stray too far from his blueprint. And so it's a very different mindset and mentality going into this season now, because it's all changed down at the London Stadium, but more of the same for you guys.
How does it feel now it's settled for a little bit? Like, what's the general
super
mood?
Positive.
Yeah, I think it should naturally be. I think whatever happens, it's like when we had that mad search a few years ago where we ended up obviously with Nuno. It's like you look at managers and you're like, oh, I'm not that keen. And then you look into them a bit more and you kind of just buy in. And it's like once it's in place, whether people wanted Lopetegui or not, you just start thinking forward about, okay, it's new
so
start,
far,
it's fresh.
I mean, he's come off well in the media, the stuff he's done with the club, the stuff he's done on TV. He speaks well. I can't profess to have listened to a lot of him speak when he was at Wolves, but he speaks well. His English is good. A lot of the presses and stuff that he's done have been with Stuyden, not like him solo, the two of them together, and really showing a united front on what they're doing. He's clearly thought about what he wants to do and what the project is. So I've got no reason to think otherwise at the moment, other than be positive with it. I think he's potentially going to be a very good signing if he can give us some good football and some good stability over the next 3 years to keep pushing and be in and around Europe and maybe have some good cup runs and be in Europe, then I think we'll all be happy. So yeah, I'm pretty positive. In terms of the transfer business stuff that's been going on as well, it hasn't been the same circus as we've seen in previous seasons so far. It feels fairly okay. I think the Lewis Yemi signing was very, it's a very, it's one for the future. I put it in a very similar bracket to Alfie Gray. He's played football
Archie.
In Archie Gray, sorry. He's played in England. So, and he's English, right? So it's a very different situation where you've got a young kid coming from South America, but it is very much one for the future. When these kids get touted as the next thing, I fucking never believe any of it until they actually do it. But it's a fair price. Wes Fodringham is absolutely the most pointless signing ever, because he's going to sit third on the bench and never get... He's our Scott Carson.
Yeah, that's exactly what me and Clayton said when we did the transfer window show last week. It was like, if he's going to be your third choice goalkeeper, it's perfectly reasonable, man.
Yeah,
and even as a second choice, he's not terrible. He's got Premier League experience, etc. Right? He's someone
but
who was number
he won't
one
be.
For a lot
and I
last
think
season.
Should we have to go down to that bottom of the barrel? would probably play one of the kids ahead of him anyway. I feel like maybe a Nathan Trott or whatever. So unless they're out on loan. But if you, James, if you had a young 18, 19, 20-year-old goalkeeper, English, homegrown, would you rather he sat on the bench, third choice at Spurs for the season, or would you rather he was sent out on loan to get first team experience in the lower leagues and you had a Wes Fodringham, Scott Carson to be that third seat on the bench? Because a lot of the arguments that people say is, well, if you're going to have, if you need a homegrown player to fill that quota, which is why you go with English, use one of the kids. But then you're starving one of the kids of an opportunity to go and play first team football in the lower league and actually get real life experience. So I'm all for having just that fodder. Bothering them, bother on the bench. Do you know what I mean? So it's a non-transfer. It's an irrelevance in the grand scheme.
Well, the easiest way I could sum it up is I would like Fraser Forster to be Tottenham's third choice goalkeeper. Because that drop off from Vicario to Forster is massive. Like, you can't replicate it. You know, Tottenham had injury problems at certain points last year. None would have been bigger than Vicario getting injured because you cannot play the same way. Now, is Forster really good as a third choice goalkeeper to help you get out of shit? Then, yeah, great. But I think Tottenham really need a new goalkeeper. And it doesn't appear to be any signs that Tottenham are going to do so. I think one of the reasons for that as well is like Tottenham have got a massive homegrown problem. Mm-hmm. And the third and fourth choice goalkeepers, essentially Brandon Austin and Alfie Whiteman, who are both, like, by the way, in their mid-20s now. I think Whiteman even might be going in towards late 20s. And as Whiteman played one game in Europa League as a substitute, so Mourinho could stat pad, oh, that's another youth player I gave a fucking appearance to. But would I be comfortable with Austin? I presume Brandon Austin would be next in line with them suddenly going up to play in. Because Forster's got a record of injury problems and stuff as well. No, I want Tottenham to go and invest in someone quite young, I think, who could really, really, you'd look at and go, right, this person could really go and push Vicario in a couple of years. There's no threat to his place or anything either.
Yeah. We've got perfectly capable replacement in Fabianski, who really is pushing on now, 38, 39. But I've not seen anything in his performance in terms of a drop-off that makes me suggest...
It's an awkward one with goalkeepers. What I mean by that is, let's just say Areola started having a fucking howler period for whatever reason. You can put Flappy in goal.
Yeah.
If David Raya suddenly starts having fucking howler period for Arsenal, you can put Aaron Ramsdale in goal. Right. The drop-off for Tottenham there in that position is way too big. I really want us to go and buy a goalkeeper. Even if it's someone that goes, not ready yet, but it's got real scope to improve, fine. I think the goalkeeper situation is a problem. Ideally, that would be English as well, but the problem with that is you're going to buy someone who knows they're going to be second choice, and if it's homegrown again, it's going to be expensive. But it should be absolutely, to go back to Fodringham, it should be mandatory for every Premier League club to have a third choice British goalkeeper who can count as homegrown. It's just an easy fucking win from a homegrown perspective. Just on Guilherme, one thing on him, Such, in terms of how good he may or may not be. The first thing that I wonder when someone's buying a player from someone like Palmeiras is, well, why aren't Chelsea buying him? Like, how good can he? Chelsea didn't want him, I presume. So, like, I'll just presume he's shit from there then.
Well, how many players can Chelsea buy? But apparently that never ends, that list of players that they keep buying.
He's got
generally good reports, but you can never tell how they're going to kick on. You can never tell. So I'm not really until I see it, I'm not going to count my chickens on that one. I suppose the main signing at the moment has been Max Kilman, and obviously the talks with Aston Villa and John Duran are progressing. We're at 35 million. They want 40.
I've not heard that.
Yeah, so 35 million is the most recent bid. We've put multiple bids, and the most recent is 35. Fabrizio Romano's sharing it, so you'd think there's some substance behind it.
Fabrizio's becoming a bit too worried about his Twitter account. and how much money he's making off it, I think. And every tweet.
He tweets a lot. But John Duran, I think, is there. And if not, I still think that there's a desire to want to go in for Ivan Toney. But I don't think anything with that will happen till post-Euros. And then it's a wait and see if any bigger clubs come in for him. And if they don't, then we'll go and try and do that deal. But there's still potentially talk around that. I think the Kilman deal is a great deal. I really do at 40 million. I don't think, I mean, what do you buy for 40 million these days? Again, he's homegrown. He's got leadership qualities. I hadn't listened to a lot of him, but when he did his interview with the club when he joined, I thought he spoke really well about, just he spoke in a calm, confident, he didn't have too much ego with what he was doing. I think he'll settle in really well. I think Max Kilman's one that we could see playing at West Ham for the next 5 years. Do you know what I mean? So I think for the price that we've paid for him, I'm happy with that signing.
I think Wolves are happy with it as well.
Mm.
I think it's on the edge of acceptable.
In terms of price?
Yeah.
Because if it was a year ago, you might have said, actually, that's a great deal, because there was a lot of talk a year, 18 months ago, Max Kilman should be in and around the England squad and that kind of thing. And there has been a drop-off since, don't get me wrong. From when he hit his peak, there's been a drop-off in the last 12, 18 months. But that doesn't mean that he's gotten shitter, because I don't think it's just more, he's not had a great run. And who did he perform best under? Lopetegs, probably.
I don't know if he was there long enough to be able to judge that. Listen, there's obviously a bonus that the manager obviously knows the player well. So he knows, I'm sure
that's a huge advantage.
Yeah, I'm sure the manager had identified him and went and wanted him. But he's 27. I think it's one of them clubs have got to start thinking more about the out of players when they buy a player. That might sound ridiculous, but you know, your longer term proofing. Like, if Max Kilman has, just to say, he has an amazing season and he wins player of the year for West Ham, what happens next summer? Does someone else come and buy him?
He's on a 7-year contract, mate.
This would be point. My point being is, no one would go and buy him. A 7-year contract takes him up to 34. I kind of get it when they're really younger. I don't even want 7 years that someone's up to 34. He's obviously, as a newcomer, going to be on a good salary. I think the concern from the Wolves guys would be, he obviously became captain, and I would say his performances probably didn't kick on. And there's been concern about him on pace, and there was a real concern from the Wolves guys in terms of his leadership stuff last year. And almost to thinking that he did need an experienced head next to him to get the best out of him. Now, so what's that going to be for him as his partner? So is it still going to be Zuma? Is it Agued? What's happening with Agued?
Yeah, Agued will be gone. Agued will go.
That's what I think.
Zuma more than likely.
Okay. Well, Zuma's obviously a very experienced player, so maybe that will help more. He obviously gives you nice balance, being a left footer.
Yeah, we also don't know if Lopetegs might play three at the back, which means maybe, is it Mavropanos on the other side? What's he going to do with that?
Might be you look for another one, possibly even. Tottenham were very interested in him, not now, but before Ange came in. So when Antonio Conte came in, he was one of the real few names that we were getting linked with quite a bit domestically. And supposedly last summer, Tottenham had already identified that they wanted to go and buy him. And Ange came in and was, no, straight away, no. Why no? Not quick enough. And I do again think there's a little bit of concern about, if you're going to evolve from a team who, let's be honest, a lot of what we've seen the last few years doesn't want the ball so much, might evolve to a team that becomes more ball orientated, and he's decent on the ball, by the way, that he might get caught out positionally and because of his turn of pace as well. I think it's a reasonable signing, but I also think the selling club's pretty happy as well. So they're looking again, right, this 27 years of age is probably maximising the value we can get now. Why has he never been called up to that England squad? People now would be ahead of him that are younger.
So yeah, for sure.
Jared Brantway is like the obvious example of that, who Manchester United bid 5 million less for than what you've just paid for Max Kilman, and he's 5 years younger and has already been in the England squad.
Yeah, but that's thrown out of hand, right? They're not going to get him for less than 60, 65.
Yeah,
so
I've heard a bit of crying of like, how much do you want? Well, yeah, start with double that and start talking a bit more. The valuation of players has changed massively. 40 million no longer guarantees you anything.
No.
Go back 10 years ago, you spent £40 million on a player, you'd be like so fucking excited. Now it doesn't guarantee you anything.
It's just the run-of-the-mill, regular good squad player, basically.
Oh, he'll be first choice for you. That's not a question.
He'll fit in nicely. There's no issue of whether or not he will or won't be successful. I think 20, 25 million, there's still a 50-50 on whether a player of that, particularly if they come from overseas, would make it. I think Premier League proven, knows them, the manager knows him, 40 million. I think if we can just get him back to even anywhere near where he was a couple of years ago, I think it'll be a good signing for us.
Yeah, I think in conclusion, I think it's a decent signing. I'd just be a little bit conscious that the Wolves guys are pretty happy with the deal as well.
Mm.
And maybe asking like why, because they're short of numbers badly, right? They feel like they can go and reinvest that and potentially buy younger. What's the latest with Pakatar?
Just on the Kilman, we may as well wrap up because there was this discussion about the sell-on clause that Maiden had.
Yeah, go on.
Well, from all I can see, because there wasn't a lot out there, was that Griffin, the chairman, was happy enough with a deal that he got.
They're getting somewhere around
£2-3 million.
You can't just call him Griffin. That's not the story, is it?
Peter Griffin. Peter Griffin. Family Guy.
I saw one of the guys on Slack said, you change it to Pete or something, wouldn't you? Why? It's his name, isn't it?
Yeah. So the talk was what the Wolves were saying to them, we're not giving you the full value of the sell-on clause. Is that what the discussion is? They went back to the table and said, nah, we're not going to give you 20% or it was, the rumor was somewhere between 10 and 20%. But when he was on Sky, they said between 6 and 8 million. He said it's not anywhere near that, but it's still significant. So let's say 3 or 4 million maybe that they're getting 10%.
Yeah, I think it's worth clarifying and saying it because I actually put the article that Maidenhead had posted both in the West Ham and Wolves channel last week. So I think there was a lot of reaction to, oh my God, this is so unfair. Maidenhead have been bullied, rare. And we used examples last week where we said it's not that uncommon for clubs to renegotiate these sell-on clauses. I think if Wolves went to Maidenhead and said, hey, this deal is going to fall through if you don't go from 20 to 10%. Here's like kind of a gun at you. You need to do something about it. Then it's easy to say Maidenhead should have called their bluff, but potentially you get a player does then stay and the 4 million
then
becomes
nothing.
You've
got to look at it from Wolves' point of view. It's like a 40 million transfer becomes a 36 million transfer, but actually Wolves are only getting 32 million out of this.
Yeah.
Now, if Wolves get 32 million, if the headline was Wolves get 32 million for Max Kilman, people might turn around and say, actually, that's an all right deal for West Ham because that's what it is for Wolves, right?
Yeah, that 4 million, people go, oh, well, a Premier League club can afford the 4 million. Is it?
No,
when we've seen clubs getting done for PSR, etc.
No.
And they're
and
hiking.
Particularly Wolves.
Wolves have hiked their ticket prices massively. So you can't say that 4 million doesn't matter. Although there is a case to say that Wolves would maybe have been better telling their fans, we're going to take this 4 million off Maidenhead and you can have the same ticket prices or give it up and you'll play more. But it sounds more like there's probably a lot of stuff in there that might be beneficial to Maidenhead. So the Maidenhead chairman, Peter Griffin, has come across as like, it almost felt like a statement to say like, look, shut up. It's all right. We know what we're doing. They obviously couldn't afford to just go, oh, we'll hold out for the 20%. But it does sound like there might be things that are arranged in terms of perhaps the sharing of younger players, possibly from Wolves to Maidenhead, like under 21 players. Maybe there might be a friendly or two knocking about in a contract or something. Like there's stuff there for Maidenhead where they've deemed it acceptable and aren't crying about it. They've kind of come out quite, I don't want to say sternly, but come out quite openly and said, look, we've agreed this. We think this is the best thing for the football club. Let it go. So Let's put it in the bin. They've been very well rewarded, and I'm sure the other National League clubs are glad that one of their rivals isn't suddenly sitting there with 8 million going spare in the bank, because that's potentially then a weapon at that level, isn't it? But even 4 million, that's amazing that they've got 4 million out of that is incredible.
Yeah, they're a part-time team, non-league part-time team. It's huge.
Well, it might allow them to become full-time, maybe.
Yeah, you never know.
Pacata.
Well, rumours are bids coming in from, is it Flamengo or something in Brazil?
Yeah. What are you doing? Just take what you can get, or like?
Well, but we don't know what the situation is. So, what if he gets cleared on appeal or whatever else? What if he doesn't get charged? Then what? I mean, Lopetegui's come out and said he's been very firm. Like, West Ham's his family. We are here to look after him. It's been a difficult time. Last game that I saw him play, it was nice to see him playing with a smile on his face. I think the club's intention, obviously, as it would be to find a way to get to a resolution where we get to keep him and he plays for us next season. I still think that's the first priority. But until when we know what the outcome's going to be of this trial or this case, how can you move forward? I think they're circling to try and pick him up on the cheap because they just want to avoid the whole situation. But yeah, who knows at the moment? It's just a wait and see.
Yeah, wait and see seems like summing up a lot of stuff, partly because the Copa American Euros as well. Some of the bigger deals, I think, are still to how you mentioned Tony as an example. We've obviously been heavily linked with Ebe Eze. There has been some rumoured interest from Manchester City and Eze. If that's the case, you just walk away and let them get on with it. But the Athletic has said City aren't interested. And there's not really any noise of anyone else about Eze at the moment. So I don't know if we're going to revisit it. I don't know if it's also going to be partly on the settlement of, say, Lucas Bergvall and whether Ange thinks he's ready to be part of the team or not. I would suggest that's probably a little bit of a jump personally, but all the stories from January was that he'd be involved from the off, basically. He's certainly training with the first team. It's quite interesting. There's 30 players, we believe, training with the first team at Tottenham at the moment. There's three goalkeepers I mentioned earlier, and Luka Gunter.
Okay.
There's Porro, Emerson Royal's obviously been linked with Milan. Jed Spence deal to Genoa has fallen through, so he's back with the squad at the moment. Sergio Reguilón's got no takers at the moment, so he's with the squad. Destiny Udogie, Ben Davis, so six fullbacks there. That's not a problem. Bissouma, Oliver Skip, Archie Gray's joined in. Bergvall, Pap Sarr, James Maddison, all in training. So to Alfie Devine, who's back from his respective loans with Port Vale and Plymouth. Tyrese Hall was a player I spoke about quite a bit in May, was outstanding when he came on in the friendly against Newcastle, was a deep line number six. And George Abbott was also part of that squad. So a lot of first team players and a few youngsters. Werner's obviously back on loan. Kulusevski's in training. So too Brennan Johnson. Manus Solomon is back fit. Brian Hill is training with the squad at the moment. Mikey Moore is training with the first team despite these numbers. So too is Jamie Donnelly. Dane Scarlett, Aleo Velez is back from Seville and is fit, and Richarlison is in training as well. Sonny's off this list because I think he's done a little bit of individual stuff at the moment, but he's probably rejoining maybe even possibly as early as yesterday, actually, maybe.
Sounds like you've got a very full squad back there.
Yeah. You might notice there's one position I'm massively left out.
Dragosin, Romero, Van de Ven. And then who else?
Well, the only out and out centre back that's training with the first team at the moment is Ashley Phillips. What's interesting about it is that's the only position that is kind of weak at the moment. A lot of the squad, absolutely, as you've highlighted, he's basically back. He's in training. Bentancur is obviously has been with Uruguay. That's another one that's missing at the moment. But a lot of the guys are in this. Despite the international tournament, we've not been hit badly here. And if there's one position you can generally get away with just putting someone back in day one, it is centre-back. I mean, Mickey van der Ven actually signed for the club on the Friday before game week one last season and made his debut on the Sunday at Brentford. So if there's a position you can maybe get away with, it is centre-back. it means when I go to QPR in 10 days, I'm going to see a pretty strong team. And it's going to be really interesting to see how the likes of obviously Archie Gray and Bergvall, I think those two particularly, how they're integrated into this. There's obviously a lot of players there that are surplus to requirements. Your Jed Spence's, Sergio Reguilón, Brian Hill is another one. It's been speculation the club's obviously open to letting, say, Manus Solomon go. But it also means there might be a relatively strong team that plays at Enfield Town for the under-21s on Saturday, if anyone fancies it. I've checked the weather. It sounds like it's not going to rain. I'm tempted to run Harry over there, Suj.
But to try and see if he enjoys the game?
Well, I know that he won't, but I'm tempted to run him over there and just see what his reaction is. Because in that environment as well, it's like, if we leave after 20 minutes, we leave after 20 minutes, right? I'm not going to force him.
Well, this is your question is, are you happy? Because I remember taking one of the boys to Watford away when he was very little, and we only watched the first half, but I'd got free tickets off my accountant or whatever. He said, go and sit in my seats because I'm not going to be there. We were in the Watford end. But obviously, Watford's such an easy, safe place to sit, and we're not jumping up and down and wearing colours. But I always knew, like, if he can't be bothered after the first half, I'm going to leave at half time. So if you're happy knowing that it might be a 15-20 minute experience for him, I'd do it.
Yeah, the other thing of obviously going somewhere like that, it's not Watford. Like, you can walk all around a pitch, right?
Yeah, yeah. And
so
it's,
if he wants to go and walk off and, you know, be in a different spot or whatever, he's shown no interest during the Euros, by the way, or particularly being interested. Okay. But I just wondered if that was the right environment on a Saturday afternoon, because normally we seem to play him at night as well. Saturday afternoon, 3 o'clock kickoff, technically can walk there from the house near enough and just take him and accept that I'll have to accept it if he's like, I fucking hate this, Dad.
Yeah,
which is
can
fine.
Katie not come
then
and
I'm
walk
not bothered.
Down and pick him up if need be?
What, just throw him out? No,
just walk to the gates. Where they're not going to be that strict, are they? Walk to the turnstiles and say, let my boy out.
Could do, maybe. Or I try and convince her to come as well. She'd fucking hate that.
That's another, and she can walk back after 20 minutes or...
I'm thinking about it.
Get the guy a hot dog and a burger. He'll happily sit there with that, surely.
He'd be on the toilet for a week, wouldn't he?
That's also true. Second half could be a little bit interesting.
I'm thinking about it. What do you think?
Yeah, I would. My plan was like, how would you feel if after 10, 15 minutes you got to leave? And you said that you're cool with that.
Yeah.
So bit.
It's not like watching the first team, is it?
Nah. Then I would definitely do it.
But I'm also thinking as well, like I said, I think last year there was a lot of youngsters involved with the first team in pre-season, it felt like. Look, there's a lot of names missing off this who might well be involved with the under-21s, might have half a decent team out on Saturday. Because normally I rock up there and I'm like, oh, I don't know half of these. But I think there'd be a lot of the lads there, actually, who I saw play there last year, might play again, judging by who's training with the first team. So, yeah, I'm tempted. I ain't decided yet. But I'm glad that you said, yeah, try it. Like, there's nothing to lose.
Nah, definitely not. And there's always other stuff going on, like mental stimulation in terms of, it's not just the football on the pitch. There's cheering, there's crowds, there's mascots running up and down maybe. There's other stuff to look at. You can always take him away off the stand around the concourse. I've not been to Enfield Town, so I don't know how much other stuff there is, but there'll be plenty.
Well, it's kind of basically built on an athletics track. And there's like one stand, which is, it's like the calf, right, basically, which is... It's out on the other side of the athletics track, so it's a good distance from the pitch. And you can go up the top, and there's about 30 seats. But you could stand up there as well. But it's more the point, you could walk around the pitch, and it's got like a railing around it where I could sit him on it.
Yeah.
And see how interested he is or he isn't, maybe. So
yeah, it's worth,
I think I already know what the answer is, that I'll be back home by 3:30.
Yeah, but it'll be good.
I'm tempted to try it.
Nice. A couple of bits on West Ham if you want to wrap. One is Karen Brady published a massive letter, open letter to the fans yesterday on Twitter. Haven't read it because it's so fucking long. You know, you see the first part of a tweet and then you hit show more and it expands out. I was like, I'll read that another day.
I'm happy for you or I'm sad that it happened.
Yeah, no idea. But yeah, so that maybe I'll comment on the next Tottenham because I will eventually get around to reading it. What is your thoughts on John Duran?
I think that would be a good signing.
I think he'd start ahead of
Yeah.
Antonio.
No, I don't think that's in question, actually.
I don't think the talent and ability is the thing in question. I think attitude and his temperament, but he's a little bit of a got a bit of an ego is the only issues that I've heard. But if we were to pick him up at 35, 40, I think he'd be a decent signing. His goals to minutes ratio is very good.
I think of it like this. Let's just say someone dropped 100 million for Watkins. Like, and then ask a Villa fan, how do you feel if Duran's playing for you up front this year? It's probably not, it'd probably be like, oh, I want to spend the bloody money. But for the fucking worst things you could do, like, he's a talent, definitely.
Yeah. I hope we can get that deal over the line as well, because then at least we've got a striker there. It then puts less pressure on trying to do a deal for like Tony or whether or not we'd still go for Tony.
I think the only thing is with
Interesting.
Villa, anything that you wanted to get out of there, ideally you wanted to do it before the end of June.
Yeah. But then he's not one they want to sell. I think without him, if they ended up stuck with him, they'd be happy.
I think a lot of the kids that Villa have sold, they didn't want to sell. So you've seen this with Jadon Philogene-Billance, right? It's
No.
quite funny. So Jadon Philogene-Billance did really well at Hull last year. Obviously been bought from Aston Villa. And he's been linked, like many of the Hull players, with moves away, and a few have already moved. His agent rocked up at Barcelona. There was massive talks about Barcelona going in for him. His agents rocked up at Barcelona and they've taken him off the premises. They're like, we've never heard of your client.
Yeah,
Then he was photographed at like outside Everton's, but I don't know if it was photoshopped. If it was photoshopped, it was amazingly well photoshopped. It looked like he'd been spotted outside Everton as well. Ipswich have had a bid accepted for him, I think, but Villa have the right to match it, and supposedly they have.
oh, wow.
So I've said this before about Villa. All those really good kids, your Chukwuemeka's, your Rogbenham's, obviously gone now as well. Like, it is disappointing from their perspective that they could have almost had a team of them come through together. Like, we kept getting linked with Jacob Ramsey still as well. I don't think there's necessarily any of them they wanted to get rid of. But Duran had been getting linked with Chelsea like in January, hadn't they? It's the quickest ways to make the bucks back, isn't it, mate?
Yeah, sure. Well, listeners, thank you for tuning into this week's Tottenham. We'll be obviously more regular as we get towards the start of the season. What's Patreon tomorrow, James? Talking tactics or something?
No, extra time on England. We haven't decided what we're doing on the for the advanced stuff, which is obviously available to everyone at the moment. We'd left it blank for Thursday, Friday, subject to maybe tonight, and if England have got a final, if they
Are
haven't got a
you
final.
watching it out? Are you going down a pub to watch it, or are you going to watch it at
I
home?
am gonna meet my dad, yep, same place as Saturday. Yep, same
Nice.
again. So yeah, nervous. Tottenham's first game's next Wednesday. We're playing at Hearts. When's your first game, do you know?
We haven't got it. Oh, you mean friendly?
Yeah.
Yeah, no idea.
And then, like I
No
said,
idea.
me and Dad are going to QPR next Saturday. And Tottenham don't play games against domestic opponents anymore. So that's really nice, actually.
Yep. Let's have a look here. Tickets.
You're
Betway
playing in
Cup.
America, I think.
Celta. We're playing Celta Vigo on the 10th of August. That's the only thing I can see on the.
That's
That's not going to be. That's home
Stratford.
matches. That's home matches. Away matches. Dagenham and Redbridge on Saturday the 20th July away. And then we're playing Wolves in America on the 27th of July, James. Wolves and Palace in America.
Yeah,
Yeah.
we're obviously going on our own money spinner. Oh, and the 21s are playing at Dagenham the following Saturday on the 27th.
Oh,
I would
nice.
invite you, but I guess you'll be priorly engaged for you.
I won't be here. Patrons, love you all. Stay safe. Look after yourselves. Ciao for now.
Come on, England. Cue music, please, man child.
Show.